International Capital Market Insights from ICMA.
Hello, my name is Arthur Caraglia. I'm in charge of running the Secretariat of the Asset Management and Investors Council of ICMA. I'm here again this week with our chairman, Robert Parker, to analyze the recent developments on the markets in the context of the COVID-19 crisis.
Good morning to you all, and good morning, Bob. Thanks for joining us again to tell us about what the market has done in the last week since the US election. What can we say about the results, and maybe if the results are contested, what are the next steps to clear the fact that Biden will be president and this whole legal action is done?
Well, the results, as far as we can tell, are being contested by the Trump government. And let's not forget that Trump stays as president until the inauguration of Biden on the 20th of January. And in the meantime, I'm assuming that the Trump administration will continue to challenge the result in a number of states and individual counties in the United States. But you know, where we stand today is that it seems to be apparent to everybody except the supporters of Mr. Trump that Mr. Biden is the president-elect. You know, he clearly got over the required 270 Electoral College votes. What is unclear still is the position in the upper house, the Senate. It looks as though the Republicans will retain their majority in the Senate. The Democrats have retained their majority in the lower house, the House of Representatives. And you know, as a result, there is the risk of a policy gridlock, because the Biden policies, whether it be on taxation, corporate taxation, income tax, capital gains tax, you know, whether it be on increased regulation in the IT industry and in the energy sector, you know, you have a very clear program of policies and action by the Democrats. And you know, with the Republicans retaining their majority in the Senate, there obviously is the risk that a number of those programs will be either blocked, delayed, or diluted. And that's why the immediate market reaction actually was a rally in those sectors which would have been vulnerable to increased regulation, most notably the energy sector, the pharmaceutical companies, and also the IT sector. And the rationale for that was investors assuming that regulation would not be increased and would be blocked by the Republican Senate. And so the overall picture has been one of an equity rally and, you know, an assumption, particularly that corporation tax, if it is going to be increased, is only going to be marginally increased, and that increase will take place over a period of time. The Democrats had proposed an increase in corporate tax from 21% back to 28%, and obviously that would have had a negative impact on earnings of American companies. And the prospect that that tax increase is going to be delayed is obviously equity market positive.
So could the very recent underperformance of the tech sector be explained by this uncertainty around the Senate results?
Yes, no, absolutely. And you know, I think the other factor to take note of is obviously the news on the coronavirus and the vaccine. You know, during the coronavirus pandemic, the tech sector has done very well, and you know, there is a very clear rationale for that. You know, whether it's working from home or use of software. And you know, the tech sector has been fairly immune to the problems caused in other sectors, most notably sort of transport, leisure, and hospitality. Those have been the sectors which have been hit very hard by the coronavirus. The tech sector has arguably benefited from, you know, developments in the global economy over the last 6 to 9 months. So, you know, if we do have a successful vaccine available widely as we go into 2021, that benefit to the tech sector is taken away. And a theme that investors are focusing on is that if we get a V-shaped economic recovery in 2021, you know, after the economic volatility that we have had in 2020, and most notably with the sharp recessions that we had in the second quarter of the year, where many economies contracted by sort of close to 20%. So, you know, the theme for 2021 will focus on those sectors such as industrials, such as materials, which will benefit from an upturn in economic growth. And you know, the support for the tech sector, which has boosted it dramatically in 2020, arguably that support is taken away.
So that's, we are only at the beginning of reallocation of portfolios, you believe, shifting from tech to value. This is only the start. It was quite impressive what we saw this week.
Yes, I don't think you should be sort of too negative on the tech sector. And I think sort of some investors are arguing wrongly that we have a tech market bubble similar to what we saw in 1999. One shouldn't forget that, you know, the tech companies have very strong cash flows, have very high levels of liquidity, virtually no debt. And that is in contrast to the tech bubble we had in 1999, when, you know, tech companies had in many cases negative cash flows and high levels of debt. So, you know, the tech sector, I mean, most sort of credit metrics doesn't represent a problem. I think, you know, all we will see in 2021 is probably a readjustment in valuations. And, you know, if one looks at the values, price earnings ratios in the American equity market, obviously the most stretched sector has been the IT sector. And if you contrast, for example, you know, IT with a price earnings ratio of close to 30, you know, with financials and, you know, other sectors such as energy with price earnings ratios in the low teens, we do have a historically wide divergence in valuations by sector. And I think, you know, I think it's wrong to call sort of a bear market on tech. I think the tech sector will continue to do very well. Earnings will still be robust. The balance sheets, as I mentioned, are still very strong. I just think you will see an adjustment in that divergence in valuations, with areas such as industrials, such as energy, such as financials being re-rated upwards.
And what are the conditions for the rally of those stocks to continue? I imagine in the first instance, another stimulus package in the US. Given the situation you've described, is that feasible in the short term? What do you expect on that front?
Well, I think there are two factors to monitor closely in the short term. The first is, will we have this fiscal expansion package? And, you know, if we go back to the period prior to the presidential election, the then US Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, was negotiating with the head of the Democrats in Congress, Mrs. Pelosi, over a fiscal package of approximately US dollars, $2 trillion. Where there was disagreement on that package was the mechanism for controlling the disbursement of funds, and in addition, were how the funds would be allocated, and, you know, a big disagreement over how much would be allocated to individual states and local governments. And because of those disagreements, the fiscal package did not happen. That is currently a negative factor for the US economy, because the support for employment, which was implemented earlier in the year when the coronavirus first hit the economy, those employment support funds have now rolled off. So as a result, the support for the labor market has started to contract. And, you know, many people, and most notably Jerome Powell at the Federal Reserve, have argued that a further fiscal package is critical in the coming months for the US economy. And after that very strong rebound in growth in the third quarter that we saw in the US economy, with annualized growth of 33%, the model which is produced by the Atlanta Fed, called GDP Now, is only forecasting a growth rate in the fourth quarter of this year of close to 3%. So, you know, really quite a sharp deceleration in the American economy. So I think the conclusion is obviously that a fiscal package is required. Coming back to my earlier comments about the Republican majority in the Senate, there is still the risk that a fiscal package put forward by President-elect Biden, and currently being renegotiated again, there is lots of scope for disagreement. So, you know, there is a real risk that as we close the year and go into early 2021, that fiscal package actually is not approved. The other factor, I mentioned two factors. First factor is uncertainty of the fiscal package. Second factor is the speed with which this Pfizer vaccine, and actually other vaccines such as the AstraZeneca Oxford vaccine, can be produced. The news that we have had that the Pfizer vaccine has a 90% success rate in saving people from either fatality or the adverse effects of coronavirus. That news obviously is very positive, and markets have jumped on that news. You know, the only question is whether we have any setbacks in the production of the vaccine. Obviously, I hope not. If we do have success, then I think, equity markets are underpinned And quite interestingly, that the setback that we have had just in recent days in global bond markets could well continue. And you know, one big feature of bond markets over recent days has been this jump in US Treasury yields, which were trading close to 70 basis points. Now we are back to close to 1%. And you know, likewise in European markets, you know, we have seen 10-year bund yields, which were trading at 60, 65 basis points negative. You know, we have now gone to a negative 50 basis points. So really across the board, one feature of markets has been this setback in government bond yields.
Yeah, and it tells us a bit about the challenge ahead for central banks now and starting to unwind this amazing level of support that they've provided for the economy during this crisis. And what can we anticipate from central banks dealing with that challenge, but also more in the short term, if, for instance, there's no fiscal stimulus in the US? Can you do anything about this?
Well, I think that we normally talk about, you know, what the Federal Reserve is going to do and what the ECB is going to do. But before we make a few comments on that, I think it's quite interesting to look at what the People's Bank of China is doing. And, you know, obviously China got hit very hard indeed with the coronavirus in January and February. And then the Chinese economy formed a base really in March and April, and obviously then had that sort of reasonably strong recovery subsequently. People's Bank of China injected significant volumes of liquidity into the Chinese economy at the beginning of this year. More recently, you know, the People's Bank of China are essentially on hold, and you know, they haven't actually started yet to reverse their easy monetary policy, but they have allowed the Chinese renminbi to appreciate, which in itself is a form of sort of discrete monetary tightening. And you know, certainly they've taken the view that with the economic recovery, you know, further injections of liquidity are no longer required. So they have moved from a very easy monetary stance at the beginning of the year to a much more neutral stance. And it's if the Chinese economy grows at 8%, which, you know, the IMF and the World Bank and most other forecasters are suggesting in 2021, I wouldn't be at all surprised if the People's Bank of China moves to a tighter monetary stance, probably towards the end of the first half of 2021. And, you know, one could see a sort of similar picture in Europe and the United States. And, you know, the IMF and World Bank forecasts for Europe in 2021 are for growth close to 6%. And for the States, you know, growth probably a 4% and potentially somewhat higher. So, you know, certainly the Federal Reserve and the ECB do not need to ease monetary policy further, although, you know, everybody is concluding that they will actually do that at their December meeting. And, you know, certainly coming back to the discussion about a fiscal package in the States, if a fiscal package is delayed, then at its December meeting, the Federal Reserve will probably compensate for that lack of fiscal stimulus by increasing its quantitative easing program. You know, likewise, you know, the coronavirus outbreaks that we have seen in Europe over the last month or so is probably going to lead to the ECB increasing its pandemic emergency purchase program at its December meeting. So I think the pattern for central banks, and notably the Fed and the ECB, is that they have one final easing in monetary policy in December. They then probably in the first half of next year, monetary policy will be on hold, i.e. next month will be the final stage of monetary easing. And then I think probably as we go into sort of late 2021, early 2022, Federal Reserve and the ECB actually may slowly start to reverse monetary easing. But I think one theme for both the Fed and the ECB is that they are going to be, as we say in our jargon, they are going to be behind the curve, and they obviously would welcome an upturn in inflation. And that, you know, you've seen that change in policy with respect to its inflation target by the Federal Reserve, which was announced by Mr. Powell back in August. The Fed and the ECB are going to move very slowly. I think one thing that's important for the yield curve is that both the ECB and the Fed, the action they're taking obviously anchors short-term yield. And therefore, I think as the economy, global economy recovers, we'll probably see more volatility in longer dated yields. And as inflation starts to pick up, albeit slowly, in the second half of 2021, then I think we could see quite a sharp steepening in yield curve.
Can we expect the, you know, the strategy review at the ECB and new inflation target at the Fed to give central banks more room for maneuver and to really unwind those programs even more slowly to make sure that there's no abrupt adjustment on the markets?
Well, I think the review of policy by the Fed, I think, is clearly announced in August and September. You know, they are going to tolerate inflation above 2% for a period of time. And, you know, inflation at the moment, headline inflation in the States, running at about 1.7%. I am assuming that other things being equal, it does move above 2%, probably towards the late first quarter of 2021. And, you know, current policy by the Fed, certainly they could tolerate 2 to 2.5% inflation, you know, for, let's say, a year or more. I think what they wouldn't tolerate would be a rapid move in inflation, let's say to 3 or 4%. So, you know, if inflation is 2 to 2.5% for a year, that's not going to prompt the Fed to do anything or to tighten policy. If we get a rapid move in inflation, I think that's a different question. If we look at the situation with the ECB, obviously inflation is well below target. And I wouldn't be at all surprised if later in the year or early next year, you know, we get a policy change by the ECB so that their approach to inflation targeting becomes very similar to that of the Federal Reserve. I think in the short term, the focus of the ECB, and Mrs. Lagarde has been very clear on this, is that she is very concerned about the second wave of the coronavirus. And the data today, although we've had very good news on the vaccine, the reality is the data on new cases and hospital admissions, etc., is worrying today. And you know, that clearly is a cause for concern in the short term for the ECB, thereby probably prompting them to focus on the size of the pandemic emergency program. So, yes, I think the ECB will tolerate higher inflation, but the problem at the moment is to actually reboot the Eurozone economy.
And well, we can't end this podcast without speaking about Brexit. What's going on? I saw that the pound did relatively well against the euro and the dollar recently. What's going on the Brexit front?
Well, actually, the election of President-elect Biden here is important. You know, he has a very clear foreign policy stance on Ireland, which is to protect and preserve the Good Friday Agreement. So, you know, under a President Biden, I think there is a very robust, clear view that, first of all, that border has to be left open between Northern Ireland and Ireland. And, you know, secondly, that all the detail of the Good Friday Agreement has to be protected. Therefore, you know, Mr. Biden does not like Brexit. He's been very open about that. He thinks that Brexit is sort of bad for the UK, bad for the European Union. So, you know, he is very much in the Remain camp. And, you know, he wants to do everything to protect the Good Friday Agreement on Ireland. Now, the reason why this is important is that, obviously, you know, one area where the Johnson government is anxious to develop is a free trade deal with America. And, you know, the Johnson government have to tread very carefully to make sure that any threat to the Good Friday Agreement doesn't jeopardize the possibility of a trade deal with America. So there's some very interesting politics going on here. This week and next week are fairly critical for negotiating the Brexit agreement. You know, the pound, as you say, has responded. And in my own view, that if we get, you know, which is my central case, a weak deal which prevents quotas and tariffs, then sterling probably settles down at 0.87, 0.88 against the euro. This trade deal, which is being negotiated, and I assume that the problems in the negotiations over state aid can be resolved reasonably quickly. Problems over fishing quotas, I think, will just have to be left to be renegotiated over a period of time. I don't think there's a quick fix to problem on fishing quotas. But a weak deal is, I think, already starting to be discounted in the markets. And you know, is sterling going to move back up to sort of 0.85 or even 0.8 against the euro? I think that's unlikely. And, you know, one shouldn't forget this figure, which is frequently quoted in the Financial Times, which is that a weak deal will involve British exporters and importers having to file over 260 million customs forms each year to process trade. And, you know, just that level of bureaucracy is going to be very disruptive.
Thank you, Bob. Thanks for this overview. I think we can pick again in 2 weeks and see how things are evolving on this very important issue. Thanks for listening, and stay safe, and we'll be speaking to you in 2 weeks' time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this ICMA podcast. For more podcasts and more information about capital markets, check out our website, icmagroup.org.